Hello and welcome to the next episode of the Everyday Ayurveda and Yoga Podcast. My name is Kristen. I am the content creator here at Halepule, introducing episode 5 already of season 10, Common Ayurvedic Myths. We asked our team and the online Sangha what are some myths that they've come across that have prevented them or people they know from receiving the benefits of Ayurveda in their life. And so Myra and I talk through these top 10 myths, and Myra, as usual, offers some brilliant alternative perspectives and truths based in this ancient wisdom of Ayurveda. And we hope you enjoy the episode and thank you for being with us. Namaste.
Hello, everyone. Welcome. Today I have Kristen with me.
Absolute pleasure to be here with you, and I'm very excited for this conversation. So Ayurveda, this ancient approach to life that's been practiced in India for thousands of years and now worldwide, it is a holistic method of health that focuses on balancing the body, the mind, and the spirit. And there are many misconceptions, myths about this science that prevents people from seeking its benefits. And so we asked the Halepule team and we asked the Sangha, what are some common myths that they have heard about Ayurveda? So that's what we'll be discussing. And let's go through them one by one.
Okay,
first one. Number one, Ayurveda is not real science.
Okay, so one thing I wanted to say was that when we talk about how Ayurveda, it seems like it comes from India. Okay, but actually there, because people from India went around the world, there are many of the practices that are in other places of the world and have been for a long, long time. So this is the other thing. There are parts of the world that use ghee. Where did they learn about ghee? You know, those kinds of things. So when people say, oh, it's not a real science, well, the term science these days has become perhaps redefined. But
yeah,
I looked up a definition, and it is one of them, was that science is a rigorous, systematic endeavor that builds and organizes knowledge in the form of testable explanations and predictions about the world.
Wow.
And I think the interesting thing about this definition is that it does leave it open to the multidimensional notion of human beings, that we're not just physical, because some of the other definitions I looked at said that it was only to study the physical.
Mm.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And these are all the typical places we might look for definitions. And then the other thing too, is that it talks here about testable explanations of things. And we've come to shape that into what happens in a laboratory. And what I want to suggest is that life is the laboratory.
Yes.
It's what is the experience? So we'll take things and we put them in a laboratory and we think that that's going to represent what's happening, but it doesn't doesn't include everything else that's having an effect. And then the next piece I think that's really good to look at is predictions about the world. It's predictions about the world. And unfortunately today, in many people's minds, you know, science, it's black or white. It is. And you know, we understand in Ayurveda that there are some principles that nature presents to us and they don't change. You know, that like qualities are attracted to like qualities and opposite qualities repel each other, you know, things of that nature. So I think it's a really fun thing to explore how you define science. But science in its truest sense, then Ayurveda is very much a science, as is yoga. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, I love that answer. Okay, next one. And this is one that we hear quite a lot, is Ayurvedic food is purely Indian food.
Right, right. And again, you know, where we've been learning it from primarily, in that one could get confused that way. Now, what's interesting is that I'm old enough that when I started going to India, Indian food was very different than it is today. One of the things that wasn't there was all the garlic. Yeah,
So much garlic.
they used a little bit of onion in the background, but not garlic. You know, the garlic thing is a was a marketing ploy in the 1970s in the United States, and then it spread around the world. Another one of those things that in the laboratory it says this, but what happens in our body is something very different. So Indian food then, a lot of the Indian food has tremendous influence from Ayurveda and that, but it also has the influence from all over the world, particularly from the United States and some European too, that are not the healthiest, that come pretty much in conflict with the principles of Ayurveda. So it's not purely Indian food. And the other thing that's interesting about that too is people say those spices, those are Indian spices. Well, actually, spices have been taken around the world for thousands of years. And so they may be grown there, but you can grow cumin in many, many places in the world, for example. And the reason that we use many of those spices, though, is because they do support Agni, they support our digestive capacity in a way that doesn't cause disturbance in the rest of the body, and doesn't cause disturbance in the mind, as does garlic in the body and mind, for example. So all of the plants have some potential to be used. I say all, most of the plants have some potential to be used. And when we learn the principles of Ayurveda, then in many places in the world, there are local plants that can be used in nice support and for a nice taste too. So, and so we emphasize that we look for, okay, what's local, then what are the qualities of it, and then how is it going to have an effect on you?
I think what's local is very important. Whenever I've moved cities, towns, or countries, I've always taken time to research what is local. Even the honey, even the milk, where can I get these and the butter from the cows, to make the ghee? What's the closest to me? Okay, next one. You have to eat Ayurvedic food.
Well, this is connected to what we were just talking about because there really isn't Ayurvedic food per se. Now, I'm going to say we're going to talk about things that are fresh, preferably locally grown or as local as you can be, and that you're preparing it in certain ways. And the preparing it in a certain way is what makes it, say, related or in alignment with the principles of Ayurveda. You see, so there's no exact foods that are Ayurvedic at all. So you could take anything anywhere in the world that someone's eating, and then we look at the qualities of it and we say, is this a good idea or is it not a good idea? And here's the effect that it's having on you. And so that's basically it. That's how we apply the principles of Ayurveda to our food. And we can do the same thing with our activities and everything we do in life. And we can say, okay, is it going to take me in the direction I want to go? You see, all of this is one of the things that's most pronounced about Ayurveda, which is that it puts the power back where it belongs with each of us. Many of us, most of us, have been given this impression that we're kind of dropped into this life and then we're just kind of out there bouncing around trying to figure out what's going
Good
on.
luck.
Yeah. I always say that in my early life, I felt like a ping pong ball, you know, I was just. And once I came to Ayurveda, then life made sense. And then I got to see, my choices are going to make a huge difference in how things go. And so it's empowering.
It is empowering, and the cause and effect. Exactly as you said, who I am today is a result of what I did yesterday. It is a science, but it's so individual. And I will respond very differently to foods that you will respond to, and our families and our partners.
That's interesting. I take me to something that's come up quite a few times recently, and that is that we've been raised to think that convenience is the most important thing. And when we start living life just for convenience, we actually get bored, right? There's not enough interesting things. And so then we have to go out and do extreme things, often things that are harmful to us.
We keep looking for that quick gratification, and it becomes almost an addiction, whether that's being addicted to takeaway food or a snack or something that we know isn't good for us. It's just an that choice.
And this is where the practices of yoga come in and are so important, because with that, yoga, a science, is a way of beginning to understand what's happening with my mind and my choices, and how can I do something about that? Yeah, so all
And
these things work together.
it's so empowering. And the next ones, we're still talking about food because it's a really big part of Ayurveda. And this one, we get asked on our social channel a lot as well, is Ayurveda is only for those who follow a vegetarian diet.
And so this is not correct. The thing to understand is that anybody can start anywhere. So let's say that I'm a person that half of the food on my plate every day is meat. So what we're going to suggest is that you reduce that down to about 20% of what's on your plate. And if you want to have it there for every meal, you can. Yeah. And then because people usually they'll come to Ayurveda because they want to feel better. Or they're having a problem. And yes, you can have that. It's just have it in a reasonable proportion to the rest of your food. Understanding from Ayurveda what is going to maintain an adult body, for example, and what is going to allow a child's body to grow properly, because we have a lot of that not happening these days. So it doesn't have to be vegetarian. Now, when you start to go deeper with it, what I suggest people do is that. Not ever think about, I have to take the meat out of my diet, but that they start to think about how do they feel and how do they want to feel. Yeah. So you can have your moral judgments about it, but just setting that aside for a moment, just take a look at how you feel. And one of the things that happens is when you have a more balanced intake of food and nourishment, then you start to cultivate more what we call sattva. And the more you cultivate the sattva, then for many people, that desire for the meat falls away.
It happened to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's this feeling of sattva that is so pure and a balanced mind. And as soon as I had a piece of meat, even meditating became really difficult and it wasn't the same experience.
Right. And it's an individual thing. One of the things that's important in life is, and that we recognize in yoga and Ayurveda, is that we need not judge. We need not judge others, as we need not judge ourselves in terms of who we are. Yeah,
Yeah.
sometimes we judge a behavior because we say, oof, I don't want to do that again. Right. But we don't have to make everybody a right and wrong. Yeah, because there's space for all of us. But people do find that over time, and particularly when they've taken up the practices of yoga, that this sattva increases and naturally falls away. And some people don't, and it's just as well. It's just fine. A lot of times people want to eat the meat because they say, I need the grounding
And the
and
protein.
the protein, right?
Yeah.
Right. And I want to suggest to you, when you're eating in a balanced way to start with, you're not going to have that time where you feel like you need to eat meat in order to ground. First of all, there's meditation that you can do that will do that very, very well. But if you're having enough augmenting food and a balanced diet, then that's going to be very rare that that happens, if at all.
Great. Okay, next one I love too. Ayurvedic approach is rigid. You need to radically change your life and isolate yourself from friends and family.
Okay. One of the things that I will say that I've had to give in to is the word Ayurvedic,
Yes.
because it's not really a word. And sometimes I'll say I just Ayurveda. But and that's just something that we've done with the English language and our thinking also, because we want that somebody to tell us what to do. And that's the thing that makes people uncomfortable with Ayurveda. Because they want to be told what to do so they can get it right. But then at the same time, they don't want to be told what to do. I mean, it's just maybe part of the human experience. But we recognize that Ayurveda isn't rigid. As a matter of fact, there are no rules at all. And as you might see around the world, there are many interpretations, and there are also the interpretation that's needed for an individual in their current condition. Yeah. Now, some people say, oh my goodness, that makes it complicated. No, not really. What it does is it takes us back to the foundation to understand the principles, to connect to them. They're not complicated. As a matter of fact, they're so simple, it's hard for a lot of us to embody it and take it on because we so want to make up a rule in our head about it. Yeah, there's no reason to isolate yourself. If you're feeling that way, then take a look at yourself and why you feel like you have to do what everybody else does. Because most of the time, in most situations, if we take care of ourselves, maybe we take food with us sometimes. I used to take food with me to events that I knew there wouldn't be food that I wanted, and then everybody wanted my food. So, and the thing is that a lot of times it's our projection of that creates the problem. And if we could just let it be okay that we're not all exactly alike, and we don't need to be. And most of us would really like that if we think about it, but we can understand how we got here, right? In school, you got to line up and you want everybody to be the same, and everybody's only the same age together. But if we take a step back prior to education of that nature, you're in a family with multiple kids. And they're different ages. So you're learning from each other in a very different way. And so that's why I think it's always important to have friends of different ages and to socialize in that way. And that's one of the things that will then help you be able to be more of yourself. And so that when you choose to conduct yourself in some different ways in terms of food, maybe and lifestyle and so forth, you can let it be okay that you're different than your family or different than your friends.
And I find that I almost lead by example, that family and friends are really intrigued, are really interested, really want to try the food, want to learn to cook the food. And they can see the change in me. They can see the change in my skin and my hair and my mood and my body and my energy. And I really, okay. Whatever she's doing, working for her, great. Okay, let's continue. Ayurveda is outdated and no fun. Have fun every day.
Exactly. There's a whole lot less time spent, oh, having a stomach ache or feeling sleepy after eating or feeling groggy getting up in the morning. Yeah, it's really nice to wake up in the morning and feel well and to look forward to the day. But when I see something like that Ayurveda is outdated and no fun, this usually comes from a place inside of us where we're afraid. We're afraid of change. Our ego wants to think that we need to be in the know. And there's all kinds of things that don't serve us very well that would have us feel that way or make that kind of a statement. Yeah, so it's a great opportunity to take a look at how am I approaching life? And one of the things that happens with having a foundation in Ayurveda and yoga is that we start to feel more secure in ourselves. Yeah. Because as we acknowledge the depth of who we are as a human being, we could say that we start to acknowledge that eternal part of us and that spiritual nature that we have. And that's actually that connection is what has us feel secure in life. And certainly the types of food that you eat and the balance of the doshas and the strength of the Agni, those are things that also make a difference in our being able to feel safe and secure in life. Yeah. And so these days, if Ayurveda is outdated, then what's in is feeling unsafe and insecure. So, yeah, I don't know. It's a choice. It's a choice. Yeah. but I'd suggest that it's a lot of fun to just go back to the basics of nature and the
Much
basics of who
fun.
we are.
And cooking is so much fun. And sharing with your food with your family and community, there is a lot of fun to be had.
You know, I want to say something about that because in the 1950s, and I grew up in the United States, so I can speak for that. But my parents were not from the United States, so it was considered to be socially that you had moved up in life if you had the conveniences. When we got a refrigerator, oh my. Yeah, all of those kinds. And when we got a freezer, and you would drive down the road, there would be big signs about these things, you know. So it wasn't just the convenience of it. It was as much that socially it meant you had made it, that you had moved up in life. And certainly the way my parents experienced their early lives, it was a big step, but was it really what we needed? That's an interesting thing to take a look at, I think. Okay, which things do I do for convenience? And what am I missing out on? And cooking is one of them. Where I lived in the 19 late 70s and the early 80s is when restaurants came around. And prior to that, everybody ate at home three meals in the day, not snacking, you know, those kinds of things. And we were a fair bit healthier back then.
Now we have Uber Eats and Deliveroo where you can just order on an app and it's delivered to you.
So I want to suggest that we miss out on some of the challenge and the creativity in life, which is keeps life pretty interesting.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, dosha quizzes are a definitive way to know your constitution.
Dosha quizzes are something that was created in the United States. And I believe it was at the time when Dr. Vasant Ladd came to the United States. There were a couple of others around prior to that, but I don't think that came about until then. But it was designed only to help our linear thinking, just to try to get people to have an idea that there were these differences, that the five elements were there. The doshas are just describing the five elements in us and how they work. So dosha quizzes are not definitive. They can be somewhat informative, understanding sort of the difference between my current condition and what I've experienced through my life. Personally, I would not use them at all, and I didn't want to, but they became so prevalent. It's better to go ahead and use them, and then we explain to people that they're not definitive. Because when you're answering it, even you're affected by your imbalances.
Exactly.
And so we would start to think, oh, okay, this is my constitution.
Yes. Now this
Because
is who I am and I'm
don't.
attached to it.
And that's the other thing is that the dosha quiz tends to make people get attached to it and attached to frequently to one dosha, which is not a great idea at all, because all five elements. All three doshas are always working together. If one goes out of balance or out of whack, the other one, it will affect the others. And so, in our attempts sometimes to balance the one without considering the others, we'll create more imbalance. But the quiz itself, it can be a little bit informative, but don't expect to be definitive about constitution. It does give us some pretty good idea of what we call the vikriti. So the constitution is the prakriti, and the vikriti is the current condition. You know, what's my state of imbalance? And so it does give some indication of that. The other thing to realize too is, especially these days, more and more, and that is that many people have been out of balance since birth in a significant way. And part of that has to do with moms having too much exposure to all kinds of things, the birth process, and then you know what's happening right afterwards. The babies are so vulnerable, And they're so sattvic that we don't even recognize it. Yeah. But if you're about to have a baby or you have one, recognize just the preciousness of it, and that everything you expose that baby to is having an impression. Make sure it's what you want it to be. Yeah, especially in those first couple of months.
Yeah, that's really helpful. Another thing I've noticed with dosha quizzes is then people tend to follow a very fixed food list. And that was actually one of the other myths that we didn't put on our list. But the food list from the dosha questionnaire, and this is what I eat now, and it's very, very rigid and strict.
Yes, you're right. The two things happen together. So if you go back to the doctors in India or the Vaidyas, they didn't do any of that. Because there's a balanced way that you can have foods. Certainly, when things are very extremely out of balance, there's certain things you want to leave out. But then, as you approach food in a way that's balancing for all the doshas, then we're able to have these foods. We're just having them not in huge quantities, for example. Before I came to Ayurveda, I loved asparagus so much that when asparagus season would come, which was only about 3 weeks in April, I would eat plates of asparagus for my meal. So that's going to be imbalancing for anybody, pretty much. That's one of the things that happens, though, when you take the approach of balancing the system as opposed to looking at one dosha. Then you can have the asparagus. You just don't have that much of it. Yeah.
Okay. Ayurveda treatment takes longer to work.
Yeah, this is an interesting one because if we can move away or step back, let's say, from the quick fix. Yeah, we've been trained into the quick fix. Yeah, and that creates what we call avidya. It creates a delusion or an illusion about things. We can pop a drug and I can feel different tomorrow. Not great, but maybe better, it seems like. And we think that we fixed it. You see, and that's the illusion. But then a month later, I'm coming down with something else, or I've got this other problem going on because whatever was going on in the first place is still going on. When we take that drug, we knock down one thing and we are going to imbalance something else in most cases. Yeah. And the thing is also is that in Ayurveda, this is the most important piece, and that is that we take away the cause of the problem. It just makes sense, right? We want to remove the cause. When we do things and remove the cause, it might seem like it takes longer, but you're going to have much better results in the longer term. And that longer term could be 2 weeks, but it makes such a difference. The other thing, too, is when you make shifts, those benefits accumulate. It's not just what happens in the first 2 weeks. You say, yeah, okay, I feel better. I don't have as much gas or whatever because I changed this food. But that change has a cumulative effect. In other words, the body isn't just responding to what happened yesterday, it's responding to a stable environment over some period of time, really likes that. Then everything else that gets affected by that starts to shift and be able to operate better. And this is why when people used to come to the farm, in Hawaii, they would come for 4 weeks. And in the 2 to 3 week range, everybody's skin was different. Yeah, that's what happens. It didn't happen overnight, but over 2 or 3 weeks, it was a big change. Yeah.
We're focused on the quick fix. I remember something you said a little while ago about it'll just come back in a different way, or it will keep showing you that symptom will keep showing you that the cause is still there. Might take a
Exactly.
pill and we might think it's gone, as you said, but a month later, 2 months later, 3 months later, we're still having the same experience.
Yeah. And this is why so many people have the experience of cancer coming back.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Because the cause hasn't been taken away. Yeah.
Okay. The next one is something that we see a lot at Halepule. Is Vata constitution should eat snacks or eat at least 6 times a day to stay grounded?
This goes back to having balanced meals. Now, so let's say the vata is extreme in excess, and there's mental instability as well as a lot of physical symptoms. Then what we want to do is we want to make sure they're eating enough, right? But by snacking, the Agni is compromised. And when Agni is compromised, it has a very close relationship with vata. They affect each other. And so that's going to actually make the vata imbalance worse. The thing is that people, when they eat 6 times a day, for example, they start to feel, we could say, a little more grounded, and then they start to feel heavy. Then they develop other problems that will come from not digesting. So we have to take care of Agni in order to take care of vata. So is there a time for snacks? No, not usually. And you might say, well, why do some Ayurveda practitioners say that? And it's because they're not looking at Agni in most cases. Yeah, so you've got to get the Agni up so that the person will eat enough at a meal to sustain them. And then the other thing is that most of the time, those folks are eating food that actually increases vata.
Rye
So,
biscuit,
yeah.
crackers.
And too much extractive food, meaning kale smoothies,
Yes.
plates of asparagus.
I used to do that. I would snack on popcorn and dry crackers and fruit and nuts and eat throughout the entire day.
Right. It not only feeds the, what we say, the imbalance of dosha, but the vata in the body, but also vata in the mind. Right. And so then it feeds itself and gets worse and worse. So I have not found that to be a successful approach for bringing any kind of balance or healing to vata dosha and to the person in total. There are 3 meals in the day, and some people will say, well, why can't I just have 2 meals in the day? That's another one that comes from the vata imbalanced folks. And that's something I did for many, many years. And the yogis, of course, will suggest that we have fewer meals than that. We live in a different time. If you're living in this world these days, we need to do things to really support Agni. And Agni likes to be fed about every 4 to 6 hours, preferably closer to 6 hours. And then we put that heavier meal in the middle of the day so that Agni has the support of the sun. And so there's those points that make a tremendous difference in our ability to keep the dosha balanced. And so we need not think about the doshas in isolation.
No.
When we talk about balancing vata dosha, we don't want to balance vata dosha without aggravating pitta or kapha. Yeah. And so if I think of it in isolation, the chances of doing that are actually pretty high.
Yeah, absolutely. Everything matters.
Yes, everything matters and it's all connected.
Yeah. Now, next one, Kapha people get fat.
So, because of this incorrect impression of kapha, many people want to stay away from it. But we must understand that we have to have all three doshas and we need that optimal amount for our constitution. And so, again, thinking about these things in isolation is not a good idea. Kapha is what gives us the grounding and the stability. And it's also what makes us sweet and juicy and loving and giving. So we need that part of us. Perhaps you've known someone who got very thin for whatever reasons. They're ill or they have gone into an eating disorder or something like that. And they get very sharp, right?
Yeah.
Because the kapha is down, the kapha is deficient, and they lose that sweetness and that giving nature, of course, because they're trying to survive. You see how the whole survival thing kicks in that way too. Yeah. Now, will person with a lot of kapha in the constitution will say, will they have more tendency to put on weight? Yes, but all kapha people are not heavy. No, not at all. And one of my very early yoga teachers was he was a kapha character, and he was not heavy at all. Yeah, so we need to just recognize and love that kapha part of us. And it doesn't mean it's a problem.
No, not at all. And this is coming from a, I tend to have a bit of copper in my constitution. You need onion and garlic to flavor food, and it's good for you daily.
Well, this goes back to that marketing that was done starting in the late 1970s, of taking those things into a laboratory and then saying, this is why you need them, because they're going to do these things based on laboratory. But they didn't look at the whole picture. They didn't look at what it does to the mind, particularly, and actually to the intestines, in the sense that they're both irritants. And they cause more stimulation and irritation and disturbance in the mind. Yeah. And I think there's been a great change. When I say great, huge change of the mentality of our societies in the last 50 years, tremendously. And I think this has been a great contributor to it. It's been a very large contributor.
When I learned to cook from my mother, every single meal had onion and garlic.
Yes. And you know what else happens? That's so sad. And this is one of the great things that you can discover coming into Ayurveda. If you take those things out, you notice that nothing tastes like anything. Everything tastes like cardboard. But if you give it a good week to 2 weeks, your taste buds come back. And then you start to enjoy all these subtle flavors, and the enjoyment of the food just is tremendously different.
Yes.
Yeah, but when you have those kind of strong, and the garlic and the onions and the chilies too, is being in it, we
Chili.
want more and more of it. It's that rajas, that it's not great for the physical body, and it's not great for the mind.
I garlic or onion. I have straight headache.
Yeah.
My body immediately. No, thank you.
Yeah, don't do this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So again, though, garlic and onion at time can be used medicinally quite effectively, and they have been used for thousands of years, but they haven't been in food, and it hasn't been in Indian food like that, as it is now.
It's funny when we give recommendations to people to cut out onion and garlic, and the shock and the absolute disbelief that food actually tastes better over time. As you said, your taste buds start to pick up all these subtle flavors that the onion and garlic were really overpowering, and food tastes better.
Oh, yeah. Much more satisfaction then. Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay, our last one. Gosh, this has been so fun. Panchakarma can be done in 3 days, one treatment, and then back to what you were doing before.
Okay. So Panchakarma is something that is a term. Pancha means five. Karma in this case means therapies or treatments. There are five treatments. Not everybody does all five of them, very, very rarely. There would be whatever is selected from that. So it's a term for taking time to go inward, to bring healing to the body, to the mind, to that spiritual connection. And so typically it used to be it was done for 28 days. Yeah, done once a year. That's what I learned in the beginning. And it's a great thing to do. But now, a lot of the treatments, the auxiliary treatments, so there are the five treatments, and those are not things that are necessarily a lot of fun. They tend to be things that are, they're treatments, they're uncomfortable frequently. But then there are the other treatments, the auxiliary treatments there that are there to support this process, because it's meant to be a process. And so now it moved into the spa environment,
Yes.
and then and now everybody's calling everything karma, and 3 days of is not panchakarma. And if you're doing one of those treatments in 3 days, I won't say never. But most of the time, that's not a great idea, because what I hear about now is people doing, maybe doing a little bit of preparation in it at home, and then they go and they do these 3 days, and they might do what we call virechana, which is a purgation, and then go back to daily life right afterwards with and they get sick. And the reason for that is because this is doing it improperly. So it probably take a little too long to talk about it to any more extent than that. Going and having an oil treatment and that, those kinds of things can be really beneficial and lovely in a 3-day time frame. And but don't expect it to be panchakarma. Yeah, then you're going to go have some Ayurveda treatments. But it's being marketed that way now, which is unfortunate. But hopefully, then you can understand. And the reason, again, is because if you do those treatments, you're vulnerable afterwards.
Of
Because
course.
what the process is meant to do is open you up on a deep cellular level, which it will, if you're given, a minimum of 2 weeks, really. 10 days, maybe, if you do preparation at home. But again, these are adaptations. It can be still quite powerful, but it's best when it's done for the longer period of time. So rather than trying to do little things frequently, it's always nice to have a treatment, to have an oil treatment of some sort. But good to kind of save up your time and money and have it as something that's profound. And then that will elevate you in your experience of life, and then you can do it again at a later time. But I want people to understand that there is quite a big difference.
And I also think that it can be a little bit risky, for people to go to Panchakarma or something that is saying that it's Panchakarma when there's a lot of toxin buildup in their body. And,
I think it's something important to understand, actually. If you've never had any kind of treatment like that before, just an oil treatment, and you have a person that has accumulated a lot of toxins, you can go have one oil treatment and feel like you have the flu the next day. So it's just good to understand that it's much more powerful than just going to a spa.
And getting wise counsel about it and
Absolutely.
just going out on a whim because it's trendy.
Yeah, I'd recommend that if you're interested in Ayurveda, that you have a consultation. And with that consultation, then ask about the things that you're interested in doing, and then you can get some good guidance.
Yeah, good. Well, thank you so much for sharing all of your wisdom and knowledge with us.
Yeah, it's great to be able to talk about these things and just to recognize that in our world these days, when we start commercializing something, there are distortions that happen. And so at HolyPulley, we aim to keep it to the principles so that you can understand and make your best choices.
I love that. Okay. As you can tell, that was a very fun episode to record with Myra G. And thanks again for being with us here at the Everyday Ayurveda and Yoga Podcast. If you'd like to book an Ayurvedic health consultation, the link for that will be in the show notes. Thank you for being a part of our community, for listening to us, and for spreading the light of Ayurveda around the world. And let's om together to close our time. See you next time. Namaste.
In Ayurveda, we understand that we each have a unique constitution. HolyPulley's tridoshic approach is ideal for families and supports multiple constitutions. You can cultivate sattva in cooking, knowing that you're making meals that support everyone's constitution. Subtle adjustments may be required, but it doesn't need to be a stress point. To learn our tridoshic approach to create nourishing meals, join Simple Ayurvedic Cooking with HolyPulley. The recipes are easy, delicious, and will leave you feeling energized. And the link to join is in our show notes.